This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and SiriusXM Channel 371.
Today has been a recap of the 20-21 ACC sports season. We've had a plethora of great guests that will continue here in the Power Hour as we try to cover everything in a span of 3 hours, Wes. But we still have unfinished business, and it starts with Eric McClain talking a little ACC football. And Big Mac joins us. There he is, front and center. What's going on?
What's up, guys? I'm doing great, man. It's crazy to think we had our first, you know, kind of huddle production meeting where we're lining things up, discussing what's coming up. And, man, I'm excited. Football is right here. So it's almost ironic that we're kind of closing the chapter on 2020 here today.
Production meetings. Hack? We have meetings?
Hey, listen.
We do.
I might know some stuff that y'all don't know about your show right now, so just get ready. There's a lot coming down the line.
I hate to break the news. We've actually had meetings. We just haven't invited Wes to any of them yet, so that's the story.
Oh, there you go. Wow.
That makes sense. That makes sense.
Yeah. Eric, let's go. Let's start here. What about 21 carries over to, or what about 20 carries over to 21 for you? What in ACC football that you saw this year and all the weirdness that we staged these games and conducted playoffs and so forth, what carries over to 21 for you?
Yeah, well, I think the communication is still going to be so key. It's going to be very interesting to see protocols and what does it look like moving forward. What is the differences between, you know, players that are vaccinated, staff that's vaccinated, and who's not. So I think we're still going to have some strange vibes. I don't think things are going to be back to normal by any sense of the imagination. And then on the field, in actual play, man, I'm so excited to get another year of De'Aaron King, you know, the great small taste that we got from him in 1 year at Miami and everything that we're hearing out of that camp, that he's recovering great and excited and getting ready for this next year. Probably the final season that we're going to see Sam Howell with him at UNC. Can't wait to see that. And then the Tigers. I mean, that young defensive line that we saw is going to be a little bit more grown up and really ready to just dominate. So those are kind of the three big things that I will certainly have my eye on this coming year, just to see the growth from a year ago.
Eric, I think the other thing that should get ACC football fans excited is the fact that 13 of the 14 schools have a returning quarterback who's played. And you've got to have that in play, right? I mean, if you don't have experience at quarterback, you're asking for trouble. But the conference should be in a pretty good spot there.
No question about it, Pack. I think the quarterback play in the ACC this season is going to be far and away better from top to bottom than any other conference. And I don't think anybody's remotely close to sniffing what the ACC is going to be able to put on the field from a quarterback position. And it's really led by Sam Howell. I think he is the best quarterback in the country. I've said that time and time again when I hosted the show with you a couple of weeks ago. We really dove into the Tar Heels and said it there as well. He can make every throw. He's such a smart player in what he's able to do, and really the outside fade ball is extremely accurate and something that he has perfected in his 2 years. The biggest jump that I hope we see from Sam Howell is just being a little bit smarter with the football and not taking sacks, throwing the ball away, checking it down instead of holding it on, building snowballs, trying to go downfield. I think that can really take his game to another level. And in turn, I mean, think of how much more explosive the Tar Heels can be if they're not dealing with these negative plays and these sacks that I know offensive line has a big part to do with it, but sometimes it's just Sam holding onto the ball way too long.
Heavens knows, Eric, 3 weeks from today, we're going to spend an inordinate amount of time, though, talking about quarterbacks. I mean, it's going to begin.
That's right.
That's the dominant position in this league this year. I mean, we've had years where we've talked about linemen, running backs, wide receivers, guys in the secondary, dotting checklists for Jim Thorpe and all this other stuff. This year, it's about QBs. I mean, you can go Sam Howell, Uiagalelei at Clemson. I mean, it goes on at McKenzie Milton at Florida State. I mean, take your pick. You mentioned De'Aaron King. The list goes on and on.
Yeah, again, there's no question. Sam Hartman at Louisville. You've got Mikael Cunningham. All these guys that are just back that are playing at a very high level and excited to see how they can progress, how they can help their teams and get even better. Kenny Pickett back for his 12th year at Pitt. We joke about that, but now we get to see him in kind of his final form in this offense. So there's no question. The quarterback play is going to be spectacular. Phil Dracovic, we haven't even brought him up, a guy that I am so excited to see him take another step forward. His big body, just really a pro right now, kind of playing in college. Excited to see what can Boston College do moving forward, because it was kind of, you know, a big culture shock. If you're an offensive lineman there, if you're a running back there, hey, we're used to running it 50 times a game. Now we're just completely changing and we threw it 50 times a game. How can Phil now settle into this offense, has great weapons all around him, really take Boston College to another level? So quarterback play is going to be the name of the game. Cannot wait to see it all year long.
All right, Eric, if we assume on June 30th, Clemson's the team to beat in the Atlantic, and I'll give you North Carolina and Miami in the Coastal. Take them away a second. Who's got a bigger upside? Boston College, NC State, or Virginia Tech for 21?
I love this question, and we actually asked it on the podcast. Kelly Gramlich and I did, especially looking at Boston College and NC State. I think Virginia Tech is still going to have to get past those inconsistency woes. You know, we've seen them look great and exceptional in the run game. That offensive line is just nasty. And then another week we see inconsistent play from the quarterback position where it alters in a loss and from the defense. So I think that they have to continue to figure that out and to really just, you know, be more consistent, because that'll equal more wins for them. But the Boston College NC State question is, it's very intriguing. And I think, you know, a team in NC State that has so much returning on the offensive side of the ball, on the defensive side of the ball, experience everywhere. I think Peyton Wilson, Isaiah Moore, Big Drake at linebacker is going to be one of the best linebacking cores in the country. I think they're that special. And then Boston College, as I just mentioned, offensively going to be fantastic. The defense is going to have to hold up their portion of the deal, you know, and that's what Coach Hafley loves. That's who he is a defensive guy. And I think he's going to get them right. So I'm going to lean Boston College, but man, NC State, Boston College, two teams that I am very excited about moving forward.
All right. Is there a player in this league that you saw a season ago that you think burst on the scene this year?
Man, I think that a guy like Zonovan Knight is going to have a really good year. I think Jahmyr Gibbs is going to have a really good year. It's going to be interesting to see what Beal Smith is able to do as kind of the guy, as the one running back now that Kenneth Walker has transferred out of there. So I just mentioned three running backs. I know we have great quarterback play, but I think there's going to be some sneaky good running backs in this league that we saw a taste of, we saw a sliver of. Now, can we see them take the next step, and what are they going to be able to do? So those are three guys that, man, I'm very excited. And even Mateo Durant from Duke, you know, he's all by himself now. So I'm very excited to see the running back position, what it can be. It might not get all the hype and love going into this season, but I think by the end of it, you're going to look around and be like, man, there's some dudes running the football in this conference.
What's the most underrated, what you perceive to be the most underrated storyline in 21 in the ACC? Could be a player, could be a team, could be, I don't know, you tell me.
I think it's going to be interesting to follow. Underrated maybe from a national standpoint, but really what Mackenzie Milton can do for Florida State. If he is a sliver of what he was able to do in 2017, just carving people up at UCF, I think that's going to be, I mean, you're looking back at like Jameis Winston days in terms of production, in terms of passing the ball like Florida State hasn't seen in quite some time. So that's a storyline to me that can alter the conference, that can really have an implication and say, okay, Florida State, we might not be back, but, you know, we're back to doing Florida State type things. So I think he's a big piece. I know people, you know, don't want to hear about quarterbacks as much as we talk about them, but it's just that good and that much excitement around the position, and he's that big of a difference maker.
Eric, I feel like in doing some reading here in the last week or so that this is going to be a really important year for Florida State, a really important year for Mike Norvell. And that's hard to say, given everything they had to go through last year, all the limitations to try and do a first year. It just feels like this could be a big year for what Florida State ultimately will be under his watch.
Yeah, you know, I think this is when you really start stepping forward and saying, hey, this is the team we want to be. We're getting in our guys. We're starting to recruit and have some of these young people come up and play. I still think it's going to take time. I don't think we're going to have any, life-altering decisions that occur after this season. But certainly you want to start seeing some results, and you want to start seeing, okay, this is why we brought this guy in here to be our head coach. So excited to see that. Again, at the end of the day, Florida State is being good is good for college football, not just good for the ACC. We need, you know, the blue bloods, the powerhouses to rise up and be who they are. And I think Florida State, you know, has to continue to hold up their end of that bargain.
I hope you're right, boys, but I still think Florida State's a year or two away, even with solid recruiting and development, all that stuff. I don't get a sense that they're ready to threaten Clemson or even a BC or an NC State, but
totally agree with that. 100% agree.
Okay, cool. I'm glad we're on the same page. Let me go across the other side of the ledger, though. I do think Miami is ready to take a step. And I know people are going to hype it like nobody's business with their opener against Alabama. And regardless of outcome, whether it's an upset win or they get their doors blown off, there will probably be an overreaction one way or the other. But where do you think Miami is, Eric, in the big picture within the league? Where are the Canes?
Man. Yeah, I think they have all the player, all the personnel to have one of the most explosive offenses in the country. Not the conference, the country, with who they have coming back at the wide receiver position. Again, this is all kind of based upon De'Aaron King being fully healthy, which, again, everything that we've heard, everything that I've read is saying that he is doing more than okay. He is surpassing, you know, kind of these tests and things that they have put in front of him. But wide receiver is stacked. Will Mallory, I think, is going to have a huge year at tight end. They have a trio of running backs that just plug and play and throw them in there, and let's see who can do what. But so I'm very excited offensively for what I think Miami can do. The offensive line should be much better. I mean, Zion Nelson, he was a guy that in our first year as the network, one of the first, I think it was the first game of the season, Miami and Florida are playing each other in a top 25 potentially matchup. Zion gives up like 5 sacks. As a true freshman, he's 250 pounds. Didn't belong on the field. He has evolved into a first-round draft pick. I think that if he has a good enough year that I think he's going to this season, he could very well be a first-round, second-round draft pick. He's that good. He's that athletic. He's that nimble as an offensive lineman. I think that's going to resonate throughout the entire offensive line there for Miami. Defense lost a ton up front. I mean, I know Gregory Rousseau didn't play last year, but I'm adding him into that mix. And two, just werewolf defensive ends. Jalen Phillips, a guy who emerged as a superstar in the ACC. So there's a lot of production there defensively that Miami's going to have to figure out. But, hey, that's what Manny Diaz does. He's back to calling plays, I believe, and just a guy who loves that side of the ball. I know he's going to get them right. So excited for Miami. I'm going to be on the Miami hype train all year long, especially leading up to that first game, and really just can't wait to see what they look like.
All right, I'm going to give you one final swing on this, and I'm playing right in your wheelhouse, so here's the fastball. The best offensive lineman going into the 21 season is who?
For ACC or for everybody?
ACC. The best ACC offensive lineman, regardless of position, entering the fall right now, today, is who?
You know, I think this is going to be something that raises eyebrows, but I think it's Zion Johnson out of Boston College. They're going to put him at tackle again, which I do not like. I think it's something that he's not great at. He's certainly good, but I think he's going to be the first guard drafted in the NFL draft. He's unbelievably stout. His hands are so fast, so strong, and his footwork is great. And this is a guy who transferred from Davidson to the Big Show, transitioned seamlessly, and again, a guy who is that good. And if it's not him, it's his teammate Alec Lindstrom. So it's in Boston College. I think they have the best offensive line in the conference, and those guys are going to be ready to roll in this next year.
As always, Pack, you are allowed to change your answer 3 weeks from today when we're in Uptown Charlotte.
It's only June.
That won't change. That won't change.
Yeah. All right. Eric McClain, be well. We'll see you in Uptown Charlotte 3 weeks from today. Looking forward to it. Excited about it.
Appreciate you guys. Thank you.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Let's not mess around. Let's go right on out to the beautiful Rocky Mountains. It is time for the coveted invite. Katie George, how are you this
morning?
Ladies
and gentlemen.
I'm great. How are you guys?
We're awesome. Now, listen, I know this is a radio interview. You're not doing television, but could you do me a favor?
What's that?
I want you to hold up the ring on your finger a second.
Oh, stop.
Now, I want you to do it.
You always do this.
I want you to do it because it's so bright, even on radio. I'm putting sunglasses on because I can feel the heat from the Rocky Mountains.
Was
Katie?
That the prop you had if I was actually video calling in? Was
yes.
That your prop?
Yes.
I love it. Yeah. I love it. You're a mess. Yeah. Wes, how are you?
I'm great, Katie. I'm great. Packer, I mean, you know what? Dashing Mark Packer, it's a very Bond-like look for him, Katie.
It's
I'm not
definitely
gonna lie.
Bond.
We'll
is
clip it?
It
and send it to you. Yeah, it's very Bond-like. You'd be impressed.
So dapper, yeah. I'm sure.
I'd be very impressed.
I'm going to do the entire interview with these glasses on because the rock game in the Rocky Mountains is so strong, even via a telephone interview on television, it's bright. I've seen it. It's awesome.
Oh, my gosh. You're a mess.
I'm not a mess.
So, Katie, we had an interesting volleyball season because a little bit like some other things, it was cut up into halves here. Same thing I asked earlier to some of the folks, Jonathan Yardley, in this respect. What did we learn in 20 that we will take to 21 when we go back to normal with volleyball, especially in the ACC, but even nationally? What do you think?
Well, I think we learned a bunch of different things, and I go back and forth because people always ask, was it a good thing splitting the season, or should they just have waited as a conference in its entirety to go in the spring, like we saw the national champion in Kentucky do with the SEC. Excuse me, they did the same thing in the SEC. And I actually think we benefited from splitting those seasons because for the Big 12, for the ACC, and for the SEC, you got to get into play. You actually got live reps. You got to figure out your rotations. Whereas for Big 10 teams who usually fare extremely well in the NCAA tournament, they had to figure that all out in a condensed schedule in the spring. And as you saw, Big Ten teams did not fare well in the NCAA tournament, whereas SEC and ACC teams did, as did the Pac-12 with Washington making it. But I think that, you know, so often we use those non-conference tournaments at the very beginning of the calendar schedule to figure out, okay, we like this person in this spot, but you know what? These two girls, they don't pass well next to each other. Well, we need to flip somebody in our rotation. Well, I felt like because they went in the fall, they were able to go through those growing pains as teams. So in the spring, they were well-oiled machines. And that's what we saw from Louisville. That's what we saw from Pitt. We also saw Notre Dame come on strong late, which got them into the NCAA tournament. They finished second in the ACC. And you also saw that from Georgia Tech. And so I actually thought, you know, best case scenario, yes, we wanted to play. But I actually appreciated the fact that they got a dose of, yes, some in the fall, and then they got to wrap up and really fine-tune some things in the spring to get themselves ready for the NCAA tournament. What do I think carries over? I don't think you see a smaller field move forward in the NCAA tournament. I think you see it resume and go back to 64. That's how I feel. You know, more teams, the better, because you work so, so hard to get to that point. You want a shot in the big dance. But overall, I think the NCAA did a nice job in making sure that volleyball was played. And even though it was in one site out in Omaha, I thought that the best team ended up winning, and it was a ton of fun to watch.
Katie, I want to go back to the ACC's Pitt Panthers because they've been so good for the last couple of years in particular. And we've had Kayla Lund on the show multiple times, and she's awesome. But I still go back to how they got knocked out, right? I mean, they were so close. They make the Elite Eight. They're partying like rock stars. They are so close, and they just could not quite close the deal against Washington despite everything falling their way early.
Yeah, and that was frustrating, right? Because you saw Louisville do the same thing to Washington the day before, and then you saw Pitt come out and absolutely steamroll Washington in the early sets. But the thing about Washington, and it's something that I saw even a couple seasons ago in the Elite Eight, in the regional finals with Washington, is they're like this slow, lumbering team, right? They like lull you to sleep, and they don't play flashy volleyball where they're just getting unbelievable kills left and right, and they're not playing super high above the net. But they just sit back, relax, and just know that, hey, we're always in this. And I think that the longer the game went with Pitt, the worse it was for Dan Fisher's team. I thought if they got in there and exited as quickly as possible and got out of there in three sets, they would have made it to the final four, to the final round of 14. Unfortunately, though, you know, Washington's just this team that comes back to bite you. And, I mean, they had played so much volleyball. I mean, multiple games for them to get to the final round was five sets. And so when you play a lot of five-set matches, gosh, think about just adding to your toolkit, right? Because you've been there. And so when some of these teams who are used to walking through their conference, like a Pitt or a Louisville, they don't have to play a lot of five sets, right? Because they're so dominant in the ACC. When they get to the NCAA tournament and then they go to that fourth set, or they're forced to play in that fifth set, they start to panic because they haven't been there. I think prior to the NCAA tournament, maybe Washington had played like seven or eight five-setters and had been really successful, maybe won 80% of those. So they knew what it took to outlast their opponents. And it was just unfortunate because, to your point, you know, Kayla Lund is phenomenal, and she's poured her heart and soul into that program. I thought Chi Inde was so much fun to watch evolve over the years at Pitt, and she was an absolute force for them on the right side. And now it's unfortunate because we're not going to see those two powerful threats for Pitt any longer. You know, they'll graduate and they've moved on. So it'll be interesting to see how Dan Fisher rebuilds on those pins. You know, they still have Jordan Lockwood, who was a transfer from a JUCO, the JUCO National Player of the Year a season ago. She's there. Chiamaka Wokolo has been phenomenal in the middle as of late. So he's got key pieces, and he still has his setter and Lexis Akeo. And so I think that he'll be fine. It's just he's got to restock a couple of key pieces. I mean, you can't replace a two-time ACC Player of the Year in Kayla Lund. So you got to find somebody else who can produce and contribute like she did. But, you know, Pitt's going to be right there at the top again, because Dan Fisher, he hasn't just built a great team here and there. I mean, he's built something extremely consistent in the ACC.
Katie, real quick, NIL becomes a thing at midnight tonight. What would you anticipate the potential for volleyball and name, image, and likeness being here in the first few weeks of this rule?
I think it's huge, and I think people maybe aren't looking at it from a female athlete thing and just a Olympic sport thing. You get so focused on the best player on the basketball team or the quarterback, and rightfully so, and those are going to have some mega deals, and I don't even know how they're going to go about, you know, structuring and regulating that. That's my biggest fear about this, is every state right now is operating on different rules. And that's, I think, everybody's concern, right, when you're learning about this and you're looking at this. And what's going to happen when everybody's operating under the same rules? You would have thought that the NCAA would have got ahead of this. Well, you wouldn't have, because it's the NCAA, but you would have thought they would have seen this coming down the pipe and recognizing, okay, people are making changes. Let's mandate a rule or a list of rules that everybody can follow. Well, that's just not going to be the case at midnight tonight. But I think it's huge for female athletes. And I'm not talking about a car dealership sponsorship, right, where you're making $20,000. I'm talking about, hey, out in California or down in Florida, if you're living in Tallahassee or you're living in Miami and there's a new pop-up shop that they want to get their new bikini line out, I mean, you play sand volleyball, they're going to come to you and you're going to get some cash on the side just to post playing in a bikini with your friends on the beach. Or if somebody wants to send you a new necklace, I mean, it's as small and as minor as that. It's caffeinated water. Hey, we'll send you a pack. Will you post because you've got 25,000 followers and people love seeing your sports posts, you know, caffeinated water on the side. Like, I just see this opening up, not in terms of mega deals. Yes, you'll see some mega deals for female women's basketball players. You know, Haley Van Leith comes to mind at the University of Louisville. I think she's got close to 800,000 followers. She's going to get some mega deals. But if you're a smaller Olympic sport player and you can add a couple of these smaller deals together, that's going to make a huge difference. And so I think you're going to see an arms race in terms of people trying to grow their following. I just hope that NIL doesn't change these athletes in terms of what they're focused on most, because so much of it at its purity is playing and competing at the highest level, right, and trying to win championships. Well, now that you can make some money on the side, I hope it doesn't distract them from the practicing and from gutting it out at 6 a.m. in the weight room with the soccer team across from you and the baseball team, you know, down the hall. Like, I hope that they still appreciate what it is at its entirety and at its foundation, and don't get distracted by money, money, money. You know, how can I grow my Instagram? Because, you know, I think so often we lose focus of living in real time, and we're so focused on the timelines on our phones and our computers. And so I hope that this is, I hope for the student athletes who can figure it out, they can balance it. And if they can balance it well, compete at the highest level and give it their all and leave it on the field or in the court, but can make some money on the side, good for them.
Well said, coveted invite. Well said.
Thank you so much.
Hey, and by the way, Katie, don't forget, when the flags are flying, Kentucky Anna's buying.
I mean, look, you'll see some new student athletes saying those exact lines. I mean, they're going to re-up with some Louisville athlete now because they're going to get rid of the old husband, which is me. What do they need me for?
Coveted invite.
It's a new model.
We always need the coveted invite.
There's only one coveted invite, and it will always be that way, Katie George. You understand? Do you hear
That's
me?
It.
You hear what I'm saying?
I appreciate it.
All right.
I'm going to hold on to that.
Go get back to work because you got stuff to plan.
Packer and Durham. This is the Packer and Durham Podcast.
We're not done the power hour. There are still more guests coming your way. Let's go down to the ATL, Wes, where apparently the NBA franchise is still kicking. There he is, Roddy Jones.
Wait.
Jumping on the latest Atlanta bandwagon.
Yeah, apparently he's failed his audition. Originally scheduled to join Rachel Nichols, Kendrick Perkins, and Richard Jefferson later today. However, Roddy Jones is left to handle baseball on Packer and Durham. Season in review, Mark. That's the way I look at it. Hey, but well, Pack, you'd be glad to know Cam Reddish. Wait, Cam Reddish had a big night last night, Pack.
Yeah, well.
We honestly really should be the ACC's team. We got DeAndre Hunter. I know he's hurt on the bench, but Cam Reddish out there balling. John Collins balling. All ACC. You guys can jump in whenever you want. Everyone counted us for dead. Trae Young's not playing. You're going to get blown out. Check the final score. Blew him out by 30. It wasn't even close. We got the killer instinct. We're going all the way. Let's go, Hawks.
Do you have your Braves cap nearby? Because that's what I heard about the Braves like a couple months ago.
Hey, it's still basketball season. We have not yet turned the page to baseball. I assume that when we do, Freddie Freeman will be re-signed. Maybe we'll wake up and the Soroka thing was all a dream and he'll be pitching for us in 2020. And maybe it'll or excuse me, 2021. Maybe it'll all go back to what we thought it was going to be at the beginning. But right now it's still basketball season, Pat.
Okay. Well, good luck to the Hawks. Good luck to the Hawks.
Appreciate that.
Whatever makes you happy.
And Roddy, you know the Durham that's fully invested in the Hawks, and it's not the one you're talking to. So anyway, right. Let's get to baseball. If we can remove ourselves from the disappointment of last week and last weekend in particular and go back to the regular season, same kind of thing I've asked several other folks. What do you think we learned this year that'll help next year? What do you think baseball – This multiplying of the conference schedule, things like this, you know what a tricky vote this was among coaches. So does that go back to normal, or do we stay with this idea of playing more conference series?
No, Wes, I think it goes back to normal. I think the familiar refrain amongst all the baseball coaches you talk to in the league were that the season got on them quick. I mean, you look at what NC State had at the beginning of the season and the struggles that they went through. They had a ton of COVID issues, which, you know, kind of is almost poetic in its cruelty, the way it was bookended by COVID issues as well. But they had some issues at the beginning. They jumped right into ACC play after playing only a handful of non-conference games, and they struggled out of the gate. And so over and over, you heard from these coaches that the lack of non-conference in the preseason, usually you get those three non-conference series to start the year and midweek games to sort of figure out your rotation, figure out who's going to be in the lineup. Coaches did not get that this year. So I think you're going to see a big push to go back to normal, the normal number of ACC series, and more importantly, the normal number of non-conference to start the season.
Roddy, obviously NC State, Virginia making it to Omaha were remarkable stories, and I don't want to emphasize how it ended for the NC State. That's been well documented. But, you know, to me, looking back at the baseball season, what Notre Dame did was really stunning. I mean, they were picked by everybody to finish dead last. You got weather issues, you got all this stuff. Link Jarrett's doing his thing up there. And they were terrific. They were the most consistent team this year in ACC baseball, without a question. And it's stunning, given how many smart baseball people there are in this league that never saw it coming. I mean, you were like, man, where'd Notre Dame come from? But they were really, really talented and really good. Mm-hmm.
They were absolutely fantastic. A true definition of a team, you know, other than Nico Cavadas, the superstars largely were outside of of Notre Dame in this league. But Link Jarrett had them playing together all season. The pitching staff put it together in an incredible way. And I think the fact that he was able to do it in his really first full season was absolutely incredible. But this is a team that believed. This was a team that absolutely dominated its regional. And if it weren't for running into an absolute buzzsaw in Mississippi State down in Starkville, it could have gone very different for Notre Dame. We may have seen them in the College World Series. You know, you can go back to the fact that we were arguing over whether or not they should have hosted a regional. Largely, they didn't, largely because they did not have the non-conference slate that others had. And that seemed to hurt teams when it came decision time for who was going to host. But Link Jarrett did a fantastic job for Notre Dame. I think that should be one of those things that we remember about this season. They didn't make it to Omaha, but it was a very successful season for the Notre Dame Fighting Irish. And they're going to be a team to look out for. Whether or not they have the superstars, the household names, Link Jarrett has them believing.
Roddy, when Duke won the tournament in Charlotte, it kind of capped a great decade of work for Chris Pollard to build that baseball program. Do they have staying power?
Yeah, I think they do. And I think they do largely because we're going to think of them in a lot of ways that we thought about Notre Dame. Like, people did not think a lot about Duke last season. And yet, this is a team that got as hot as any down the stretch. They got put in a really tough regional. But the way they played the last month of the season was absolutely incredible. So, yeah, they absolutely have staying power. Now, the question is going to be, what happens to the powers in the league? You know, this was a league this year where Louisville obviously did not make the tournament. Louisville will certainly be back. What's going to happen with North Carolina, with Clemson? So those are all teams that we're going to kind of have our eye on, because as those teams rise, everybody can't be great year in and year out. But I believe in what Chris Pollard's selling. I believe in that team and that program, and they have proven that they can be consistent in the ACC.
You know, another great story for baseball, I thought this year, was Pittsburgh. I still think they got hosed by the committee, but it's over and done with. Down the road you go. You got to win more games, obviously. But, man alive, in a very, very short period of time, the Pitt Panthers all of a sudden look like they're going to be a factor in this league. And who would have thunk that?
You're exactly right, Pac. Pitt was a team that I guess, other than NC State, probably had the most unfortunate run with COVID this season. They were playing fantastic before they had to go on their COVID break, and then really struggled after that. And unfortunately for them, it happened the last month of the season, and then they bow out of the ACC tournament before making it to the semifinals and don't make a regional. But when you look at their body of work overall, just win-loss record, who they beat, where they beat them, this was a team that probably deserved to make a regional. Now, because of the fact that most of their series losses, and they had some bad losses the last month of the season after that COVID break, They obviously did not. But Pitt was a fantastic story for really the first 2 months of the year. And unfortunately, after that pause, they just were not able to get things going. But again, Mike Bell's done an incredible job getting those guys to believe. They really have an identity, a belief, and they really play up that, hey, everyone's counting us out. Everyone forgets about us up here at Pittsburgh. So that's another team that probably will be a little under the radar coming into next year, if I had to guess. But again, like this year, could make some noise.
All right, Roddy, give me, of all the players you saw this year, give me the guy coming back that, I mean, we saw Matt Nelson just own it this year in terms of home runs. Give me a guy you think we need to keep our eye on going into next year. I mean, Kevin Parada had a great year at Georgia Tech for a freshman. I mean, but there are a lot of – Nick Kent was sensational at Virginia, especially in the postseason. Is there one player in particular that you say, hey, wait a second now, don't forget this guy's in the league?
Yeah, and it's Sam Heifel for NC State. You went mostly position players, but Sam Heifel, the way he pitched down the stretch – I mean, you got a guy that's going toe-to-toe with Jack Leiter. You got a guy who is winning games in Fayetteville, Arkansas. You got a guy who goes down to Ruston and absolutely shuts every team he faced down. He pitched in that second game against Louisiana Tech, absolutely controlled that game. So when you look at Sam Heifel, I think that he is going to be one of those pitchers next year that's going to walk out on a Friday night and is absolutely going to be fantastic. He really impressed me down the stretch, not just in the regionals, super regionals, and in the College World Series, but also towards the end of the season. He was a second-year freshman that was getting his first run through ACC play, and as the stage got bigger, he got better. So I look at Sam Heifel as a guy that I am really looking forward to seeing next year.
Hawks or Braves, who wins a championship first?
Hawks, baby. It's happening this year, Pac. It's happening this year. The Red Sea has parted. The Suns are probably going to win the West, and they're not playing all that well. I mean, they're winning games 86-80. Like, that's not going to fly against the Hawks, who want to get in a race to 120 every single time. Giannis, who knows if he's going to play? We've already proven we don't need Trae Young. Hawks are doing it this year, Pac. This year.
Pac, don't – press your luck here. That's it. Future's so bright, you got to wear shades, right? Pac, you could ask Roddy for a Euro update, but I don't do that either because I got one on the phone yesterday and didn't necessarily lead into one.
I would never ask for a Euro update unless it's my flight to London or Rome. That'd
just
be the only Euro update I'd want to know.
I'm not going to give you the update, but if you're not watching, you're missing out. We had some fantastic games in the quarterfinals. Semifinals up next. So get ready.
By the way,
first to one wins. First to one wins.
Yeah.
Pat, you would have enjoyed the 5-3 game we got the other day. That game was bananas.
Yeah, I would have. But you know what? I was busy eating kale.
Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
That was a cavalcade of guests. Now, that was a little bit of everything. And great job by the entire crew up in Bristol, all the smart people putting that thing together. And we're just leading the parade today.
No doubt.
It was good.
Thanks to Seth Greenberg, Jonathan Yardley, Anish Shroff, Kelly Gramlich, Rock Harrison on vacation, Dana Boyle going on vacation, Eric McLean, Katie George in the midst of plans out in the Rockies, and Roddy Jones, who stayed up late to watch the Hawks. All a part of the program today. Tomorrow on this show at 9 o'clock, Mark and I are fortunate during the year to present a lot of awards. Tomorrow we present the Anthony J. McKelvin Male Athlete of the Year in the ACC and the Mary Garber Female Athlete Award in the ACC. We'll do that tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. Right here on Packer and Durham. And we are delighted to say that Virginia Athletics Director Carla Williams will be with us at 7:30. And what a marvelous season the University of Virginia has had across the board, Mark. Not just Brian O'Connor, Bronco Mendenhall, Tony Bennett, Lars Tiffany, swimming it. I mean, name it. And Virginia has – and Carla was also one of those first people that talked to us about financials and all this too, right? So a year later, where, how does that all work now? And I'm really, really excited to talk with her and just get her insight. She's one of our favorites on this show, and we look forward to the visit tomorrow with Carla Williams at 7:30 on Packer and Durham.
Very smart, really on top of the big picture. We always enjoy the conversations because we learn something every time we have Carla on the show. Mm-hmm. So we're looking forward to having her back. And yeah, you're right, Virginia's had an amazing 20-21 sports season. Yep. And, you know, it's a shame we're going to put the chapter and shut it. But, Wes, I got to be honest with you. I am thrilled to death that today's the last day of June. I am. I'm ready for July. I'm ready for July 4th yep. holiday weekend. I'm ready to get to these media days. I've said it from day one. Everybody's got their countdown mm-hmm. clock and all that stuff. But when you get to the media days, and I don't care if it's the Big 12, the Pac-12, ACC, SEC, Big 10, whatever, it's like the official start of the college football season. And it becomes go time by the time we get to the middle of July. So we've got about two more weeks. And, of course, we're going to go dark after a Friday show, and you get the replay from 10 to 1, and then we got the takeover with all the schools. So we'll disappear for a couple weeks. But when we return the week of July 19th, it is go time mm-hmm. for football. Absolutely go time.
All right, a couple of items here. Yesterday, a Mia Hamm rookie card sold for $34,440. Now, I've never been into the card collectibles, but apparently this is a rookie card for Mia Hamm when she started to play professionally, and it took almost $35,000 in the collectibles market. It's pretty strong. Most expensive female card ever sold, Pack.
I will say she was awesome to watch play, and she's been a great ambassador to the sport and to the University of North Carolina. But my $35,000 was safe there. I was good. Between the vet bill last night, I'm not sure I could have afforded that after taking care of Chester and all his issues last night till midnight. Yeah. So, again, somebody out there got $35,000 to spend. Awesome. Knock yourself out. Again, the easiest mm-hmm. thing in the world to do is tell somebody how to spend their money. That's the easiest thing in the world to do. Yeah. Man, you're crazy you buy that.
Good point. Right.
That's the deal. So, makes you happy, go for it. You can afford it, go for it.
The game in college athletics changes tonight at midnight. Name, image, and likeness in 4 ACC states, 14 nationally, goes into law. Florida, Georgia, Massachusetts, Kentucky becomes law tonight. We will see where that leads us tomorrow morning. It's going to be interesting. Pack, you've always said the college landscape is changing right in front of our eyes. Well, tomorrow might be the biggest change of the lot, as they say.
This will develop. Just going to tell you, everybody's expecting monstrous deals. Everybody's going to sign a deal by tomorrow. Not necessarily. This will ebb and flow. What I am curious to watch with all of this is how many student athletes are actually impacted. We got 500,000 student athletes. So what will be the number? That to me is the more interesting part of all of this. I still think it's going to be a fractional number, but we'll see.
Tune into Packer and Durham weekday mornings from 7 to 10 Eastern for the best conversations about everything from the ACC. Find it on the ACC Network, SiriusXM Channel 371, and streaming on the ESPN app.